Jeff Merrick, we've had many firsts on this podcast through the years.
We have another one?
We've had, we've had many things happen, many historic landmarks. But today is one that I believe, and you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe is a first. Do you want to guess? Want to hazard a guess, sir?
That's what I'm trying to think of. Let me see. First on this podcast, I'm going to tell a new story that I haven't repeated in the past.
Ooh, well, you know, that there was the first episode.
Greg's going to drop Greg's going to drop a Doctor Who reference that I actually understand.
No, that'll never happen. No, the historic thing that's happening today, the history-making moment in the history of MVSW that's happening today is I am doing the podcast in a bathrobe.
Okay, Hef. Where are you doing this podcast from? Are you is this a new? I didn't get the email or see the press release from the Yahoo group.
Now,
is this a casual Wednesdays now around Yahoo?
Well, I'm not doing the podcast from Yahoo. Obviously, I'm doing it from the comfort of my home. And I don't appreciate your Hef reference, sir. I'm not sitting here with a bubble pipe and surrounded by triplets. I merely, and this is going to shock you, I merely mismanaged my time.
Okay, hang on. Let me ask you some very basic questions about the day.
Okay.
Have you showered yet?
Yes, that is the thing that happened that put me in the bathrobe.
But then after you showered, you got right into the bathrobe and figured. What's with these pants here? What do I need these
for? Well, no, you see. You're getting the timing of things all wrong. When I got into the bathrobe, it was right after I got out of the shower, which was at 1:58, with the podcast starting at 2 p.m.
You got out of the shower at 1:58.
Yes.
What have you been doing all morning? What time did you get up today?
When I work at home, I tend to blog in my jammies sometimes, or just shorts and a t-shirt.
I love it when all my blogger stereotypes come to life.
I made a half an omelet this morning. I blogged in my shorts and a t-shirt, and then I took a shower at roughly 1:50. And you're right. Now I'm bearing the lead on the bathroom. This is the reason I wanted to talk about it, not to
hang
reinforce
on,
blogger stereotypes.
Wait a minute. Before you go on about your part of the bathroom, like many people listening right now, both of them.
Yes.
We're thinking to ourselves, does he have, is it an R2-D2 bathrobe or a Chewbacca bathrobe?
This is exactly, you see, this is why you're Captain Segway. Have you ever seen the movie Fight Club?
Of course I've seen Fight Club. Come on,
okay.
First rule.
Yeah. During the early part of Fight Club, when Ed Norton and Brad Pitt both move into that flop house together, that big like abandoned mansion where they start making the soap and all the bombs and stuff.
Hang on. You have the Tyler Durden I'm so jacked bathrobe on?
I have the Tyler Durden ironic lavender with mom's coffee cups bathrobe.
Oh my god.
The actual bathrobe that was modeled in the movie.
Wow. Now, and you have the chiseled / steroided physique underneath said bathrobe, right?
Oh, I mean, without question. I mean, there's nothing. Who would want to wear this bathrobe if you had moobs?
Right. You're laughing, lighting matches off Greg Wyszynski underneath that bathrobe.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Off these. That's right.
Okay.
I'm literally grating cheese as we speak
on
my abs. Here, I'm gonna tweet a picture of the thing in a second.
Shredding
here.
Lettuce.
Shredding lettuce with my abs. Yeah, so this is the first time because of my unique grasp on time management that now I'm making the assumption here.
Have you ever done the show in
the bathrobe, or have you ever done the show in the all together?
I've done this for some of the summer podcasts. I've come in from a run and just taken off like a dry fit shirt and just done it in my shorts. That's about it.
Wait a second. So you'd be like shirtless?
Oh yeah, baby.
Oh, we need to start video casting this thing. We'll find advertisers baby. In a millisecond.
Oh yeah, real lickety split.
Yeah,
but I don't think anything else. I don't think I've ever done it. I mean, I'm sure I've done it in my boxers before.
Mm.
Oh, for sure I have.
Yeah.
But never in the bathrobe. Something about the bathrobe. Okay, because there's always been like, do you have a cutoff point past which you just can't wear a bathrobe? Like, you just feel like a slob. Like, I feel I can wear a bathrobe till about 9 o'clock in the morning.
I think
after which I'm like, dude, Take, you're a grown up, you have responsibilities, take, cause nothing says, I don't give an F about responsibility, quite like wearing a bathrobe.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, 2:06 Eastern deep into the afternoon.
I was gonna say that I'm pretty sure that my threshold is about 45 to 50 minutes.
My threshold. And so you feel like a slob? And so you feel like, but then, do you try to justify it to yourself by saying, well, I mean, Brian Wilson made some of the best music the world's ever heard wearing nothing but a bathrobe, and, you know, no one's giving him grief.
And the dude Lebowski, also a bathrobe wearer, a muse, both of ours.
Modern philosopher, absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, well, there it is. Okay, maybe I'm getting turned around on the whole thing, but somehow I do have a cutoff point. I can wear a bathrobe at night and not have the ethical dilemma about it. But man, when I wear one during the day,
yeah,
and it's, you know, getting past 10:30. I mean, I'm up early anyway. Mm-hmm. It's like I feel like a slob.
Well, I think the real issue right now with this bathrobe is this. Go ahead and ask me when's the last time I laundered this bathrobe.
Oh no, when's the last time this?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh,
this could be really. And I know for a fact that I've also laid this bathrobe down to dry off my daughter's bath toys. So it really could be. There could be an entire civilization growing on my back right now. It's totally possible.
Hang on a second. Oh, hang on. Okay, so you actually did tweet it. My bathrobe.
Yeah.
You have that exact bathrobe? That really, eh? That's a pretty dope bathrobe, man.
It's a very dope bathrobe, yeah.
You got to start smoking cigarettes, too, because I'm sorry, it just looks too cool in that. And that's don't forget, kids, if this podcast has taught you anything about smoking, it's secondhand smoke equals secondhand cool. Always remember that, kids.
That's right.
Always remember that.
Cigarettes are the gift that keep on giving. Mm-hmm. Without question, they help us. It helps yourself and helps others. Let's get to hockey. Last night was balls out, awesome.
Much like I am,
by the way, right now. The Ottawa Senators, ladies and gentlemen, with another victory. Now, here's the interesting thing about that win last night. Is that, I mean, this really has. We've all been caught up in Mark Stone mania and the comeback and the whole thing. I really like the fact that they gave away the charity point last night, because tying the Penguins in the standings did them no favors. Now you've got an even odd thing going on with Pittsburgh, where if you win out and they drop one, you're in.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. Now
it
you got even
was,
odd.
That was honestly, first of all, last night was boffo. Last night was hockey, stupid hockey, awesome hockey, oh my god, whether it's center ice goals or goaltender flubs or amazing comebacks, like
it was like a season
like
in a night.
it was like everything last night. And man, I was really close to tweeting early on when it was 3 Cobb Penguins, like, oh well, nice run Ottawa, but you know, that's it. So looks like the Ottawa Senators have run out of road on the season. And I'm like, something in the back of my head just said, you know, dude, just don't back up. Leave it alone. Oh. Don't do that. And I'm glad that I didn't.
Yeah. And you're starting to wonder whether this is going to end up with a destiny thing. Cause like that shorty they scored in the second to get back in the game was the kind of goal that scored when things are going unbelievably well for your hockey team. I mean, that got them back in the game, and that was a goal that should have never even been scored. It was a complete fluke. But they earned it in the third. I mean, the third period, they were beating the Penguins pillar to post for most of that period, outside of maybe a little bit of a stretch, maybe from like the 12 mark to about the 7 mark when the Penguins got back into it.
Lost in that great game last night, or that entertaining game last night, is that Marc-Andre Fleury was really good.
He was really good,
Marc-Andre Fleury was fantastic last night for the Penguins.
Yeah.
Hey, Crosby was good early. Crosby was really good early. And then how about that Mark Stone shot, though? And I can remember, I didn't get all Pierre Maguire on you here, but I can remember him and Brandon when Ottawa drafted him, and everyone's saying, yeah, really good junior player, good size, but don't know if he's going to be able to wheel at the NHL level. And, you know, when he first started, I was like, oh yeah, shortcuts to the net, shortcuts here, shortcuts there. What a shot.
Yeah.
Mark Stone's been fantastic for the Ottawa Senators.
Now, here's a question though, because I got to talk about this later on a video, and I've had this debate with a few people in the last 24 hours too.
Okay.
I completely agree that he is one of the best rookies of the season. There's no question Mark Stone is one of the best rookies of the season. Yeah. And I do believe that at the end of the day, he's going to Corey Perry his way into the top three for the Calder. He's got, I think, somewhere along the lines of 19 points in his last 20 games. He's made up amazing ground. He's going to be amongst the league leaders in points, if not the league leader in rookie points. Who do you kick out, though? Like, who do you kick out of the top three for Mark Stone?
Because if the argument
is that he's got better numbers than Philip Forsberg, I mean, the role Forsberg played on that Predators team earlier in the season was something that Stone can't match.
Here's
Goudreau's had all the high spots. I mean, he's been like the Rey Mysterio of this quartet.
Oh, nice reference.
And I don't know how the hell you keep Ekblad out. Because the more I think about it, and I've tried to keep this out of the equation when I've made the argument for other players in the past, but I'm sorry, like, if you've got Ekblad at 19 years old doing what he's doing,
I know,
versus
it's
other,
I know. It's Ekblad.
It can't be the reason, but it has to be a reason. It has to be a reason.
He's mine. But here's the thing: it all comes down to what you value. Do you value points in November the same way you value points in April or March? Like, and even should we? Like, shouldn't a point be a point? It should. But it doesn't feel that way.
But it doesn't.
It feels like,
yeah.
And again, last night, and you saw Mark Stone with the OT1, like, it just feels like these are heavier points than points in November, which aren't empty calorie points, and they help with the Nashville Predators on the map.
Right.
And they help, you know, kickstart a wonderful season for the Preds. But don't these just feel like, and again, one point is one point, but mm-hmm. don't they feel like bigger points right now for Stone?
Right, and that's how Perry won the heart. I mean, Perry won the heart essentially because of what he did down the stretch for the Ducks that season.
You could make the argument that Mark Stone's points are more meaningful. Therefore, Mark Stone should get consideration over Philip Forsberg for Rookie of the Year.
Their numbers are very, very close. Forsberg's got a significant advantage in power play points, but their goals and assists are identical right now. Although Stone's played two fewer games.
Yeah. But then you say to yourself, well, you can't knock Philip Forsberg for not being in the same position that Mark Stone finds himself in. I mean, Nashville got tucked away pretty early, had a nice run, and Philip Forsberg was never in a position to do what Mark Stone is doing right now.
Right. He's got the whole narrative wind at his back.
100%. And can you knock Forsberg for that? No, you can't. That's not of his doing.
Yeah. But the other thing, that Mark Stone's got a 16.0 shooting percentage right now. It's best for any rookie. That's insane. There's something to be said for being on a hot streak at the right time, the whole thing. I have a real problem trying to kick out Goudreau or Forsberg for Stone. I don't know if I could do it. I mean, at the end of the day, if Stone ends up leading the league in rookie points, he'll get the nomination, and then we're going to have to really figure it out. And then probably Forsberg's the one that gets out, because I think Goudreau's got, like I said, more juice. I mean, Forsberg didn't try to light a stick on fire at the All-Star game. I've seen people make the Klingberg-Ekblad argument that Klingberg deserves Rookie of the Year honors or a spot in the top three more than Ekblad.
Whoa,
time on ice, but 39 points in 63 games for Klingberg, which is an insane number of points for a rookie defenseman in that sample size. But Ekblad
is true. But here's the thing about Stone too, and this is more of a sidebar and probably shouldn't be taken into consideration when you're voting on the Calder, but players like Stone, players like Hoffman, and we all thought it was going to be Curtis Lazar, but also players like Mika Zibanejad as well for the Ottawa Senators, have forced us now to rethink Ottawa's top six. They lose Albertson, trouble. They lose Jason Spezza, more trouble coming. And all of a sudden, you know, Kyle Turris, is he undernourished or can he be a number one guy? All of a sudden, the emergence of Stone, Hoffman, and Zibanejad, and you would assume that Lazar is on the horizon with that skill set. We're rethinking right now what the Ottawa Senators' top six is and how good it's going to be in the future, aren't we?
Yeah,
We're not really saying much about Bobby Ryan anymore, are we?
No, although we should definitely be talking about how Kyle Turris has done what many of us didn't believe he would do, which is become an outright, honest-to-God, Jason Spezza who... number one center. He's been fan-friggin-tastic for them. Every shift. Watching him in the last couple of weeks was watching a guy at just the height of his powers. Every shift, puck control in the offensive zone, setting up plays, playing smart, making plays to keep the puck alive in the zone. He's just been fantastic. He's been I never thought Kyle Turris would be that kind of player. I was somebody who was like, oh, they're taking how cute. They're taking a flyer on this complete bust, and maybe he'll turn out to be a nice number two center for them. He is bordering on stardom for that team right now. He's fantastic.
keep coming back to that Sam Pollock quote I've dropped from the podcast a lot this year, as it relates to players like Tyler Seguin, Jacob Voracek, Patrick Kane, and now we throw Kyle Turris into that mix. Never give up on a young player until you are 100% sure. Think Arizona yep. wants that one back?
Yeah, I think so. Although maybe that's a Seguin situation where he's never going to amount to anything in Arizona. Who knows?
That situation is probably dictated more by the coach than anything else.
Being the coach, you looked at Kyle Turris and said, hey, why can't you do the thing I can do being the best player of all time?
Well, it wasn't just him. It was Dave Tippett, too, right? I mean, it was.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's why there's that. I don't know. I think Arizona thinks that they may have, hastened Vodka too much, blown it on Turris. And that's one of the reasons why they sent Max Domi back, which in hindsight was probably the best thing for him. He's coming he's had a boffo year in London. He's coming back as an NHLer next season.
And plus, it was probably that and the complete disintegration of Mike Smith's game are the reason why they'll probably have Noah Hanifin at the end of the season. Assuming that they, I'm assuming, by the way, that Buffalo gets.
I was going to say,
they get Eichel and that someone else gets McDavid. I'm starting to believe that, by the way.
After all this, someone in the 80% gets it.
I was on Buffalo Radio this morning talking about this, and like the two competing factors against the Buffalo Sabres are this. We don't know. We talked about this yesterday. We don't know how the hockey gods are going to react to a tank, and we know that Gary Bettman looks down the list of teams that need Connor McDavid and sees the Leafs and the Flyers, and you're just like, oh God, poor Buffalo.
I want the Panthers to get them. I want the Cats. I want the Cats to get them. Follow those teams. I know Loper's.
All right, listen.
Whatever.
All right. Ottawa's got at the Rangers tomorrow night at Philly. Rangers have the whole shebang sewed up. Top seed in the East, top seed in the Metro.
Tucked
winnable
away.
Game. Philly never goes quietly. They, as evidenced last night, as the Islanders found out last night, thanks to Yaroslav Halak, they'll never go quietly, so that's going to be it. That's a tough game. Boston has at Washington tonight. As we talked about yesterday, Washington is going to be playing Holtby. They're looking to secure home ice in the first round. This is not going to be an easy game for Boston. They go at Florida, Luongo versus Boston, hopefully, which obviously is not one that'll be an easy one for the Bruins. And they close at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay might have the opportunity in that game still to try to pull out the top seed in the Atlantic. So Boston's got a tough role.
And now, considering the opportunity is there with Max Pacioretty not available for the last two games of the season, as announced by the Habs today against Detroit and Toronto.
And then Detroit's got at Montreal, at Carolina. They're probably in. I should probably come to grips with that. And then finally, Ottawa, Pittsburgh, which we'll talk about now with our guest Rob Rossi, versus the New York Islanders, then at the Buffalo Sabres, back-to-back, Friday and Saturday. Obviously, Buffalo will have the top pick. The number 30th position in the league sewn up by Saturday. The Islanders are in a game that they need to win to try to maybe secure home ice. We'll see how that goes. And obviously don't want to lie down for the Penguins either. So Rob Rossi, observer of this Penguins team, a man who knows the ins and outs of Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin for years, what do you think is going to happen? Do the Penguins make the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I think they'll figure out. I think things will work in their favor to get in. I don't think it's because they're going to win their way in. I think they'll figure out a way to get a point, and something will sort of benefit them. But I mean, they're a terrible hockey team right now, and they would be playing the worst of any team entering the playoffs. And right now, you got to call the Penguins what they are. They are a team with the third worst record in the Eastern Conference on December 22nd. I mean, they are, they're a laughable excuse of a Stanley Cup contender. And if they get to the playoffs, they'll be the first team to be swept in two.
Of course you want to make the playoffs and that's always, paramount, but let's say,
bad financial situation for them.
And they need at least a couple of gates, but are they not just sort of delaying the inevitable? Okay, they get in, wow, that's great, get a couple of home dates, but then they're out in the first round. What goes through the minds of Burkle, Lemieux, and how does that trickle down to what happens on the ice?
Well, I don't think Burkle and Lemieux have been on the same page for the past year. I think if Lemieux had his way, Ray Shearer would have kept his job. So I expect you're going to see a tussle right now for this control of this franchise. I think Mario wants to put it back in the hands of hockey people. And I'd be very surprised if you didn't see a new I wouldn't be surprised, but it wouldn't shock me if you didn't see a new manager and coach of this team next year. Mm-hmm. I think both Jim Rutherford and Mike Johnston have their jobs on the line this weekend.
Do you put any stock in the idea that if they miss, that they're going to do something real drastic and probably stupid and make a trade they shouldn't make?
Yeah, I actually believe that's why Mario's trying to take back control of the franchise, because I believe he's going to try to resist doing something stupid. But I think there's going to be a move to completely overreact, as they did last year. You know, they had a pretty stable thing here in Pittsburgh, but they had people who believed they should be winning the title every year. And now they might end up missing the playoffs because of what they did. So,
how big is Crosby's voice in any of these decisions?
Could be a lot bigger. I think if there's ever going to be a time for Sidney Crosby to put his foot down and to go be the superstar that has a voice that he wants to assert, I think this is the time to do it. Because otherwise he could find himself playing on a franchise that is missing a couple of players that they would need to compete and not having a whole lot to help him go forward as he plays out, you know, the final few seasons of what would be his prime.
Wow, that's crazy.
I think it's time for Sidney Crosby and Mario Lemieux to be on the same page and take back the Penguins.
Yeah, it's a tough nut to crack because, I mean, you know, you've got the two guys making all the dough. They bring in Rutherford. He allegedly is going to build a supporting cast, but the supporting cast has not been all that good. They were good on paper beginning of the season, but on ice has not really done the job. Where do you start? Where is the first cut for this team if you do try to reconfigure things heading into next season beyond the managerial suggestions you just made?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is look at your four best players, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and Fleury, and say which one of them could get us the most in return. And then you have to make a really hard decision, because Crosby and Malkin have complete no-trade clauses. And I think they're going to be very resentful of being asked to waive them, given the money they gave up to sign in Pittsburgh long-term. And then you have Letang, who has a 12-team no-movement deal. I think he wants to be here too, but I think he's probably the guy that, you know, defensemen are not a dime a dozen in this league. You know, elite defensemen like him can bring back a lot of value, and he's got a pretty agreeable cap number, just over $7 million for everything that he does. So that might be the guy they look to move. But the truth is, guys, and this is the most desolate part of the Penguin situation, there aren't a lot of good options. They have a lot of holes, and they don't have a lot of options to fill.
You literally tweeted last night that this could possibly be the final home game of the Crosby-Malkin era. I mean, that's where we're at?
Yeah, I think so, because I think if they miss the playoffs, look, I mean, here's the bottom line with Crosby and Malkin. They took a lot less money to stay here, and they were promised that the team would be a contender. If you've made that promise and you break it, why do they ever have a reason to trust you again? Somebody's going to pay them. Maybe somebody can pay them somewhere else where they have a better chance to win.
Wow, crazy.
You know, the longest of long shots out of all of this would be, is there any way that they do something with Crosby?
When Gretzky got traded.
Nah, come on now.
But hang on.
I don't think so either,
but
My view on this is very simple when it comes to both big centers, guys. The Penguins aren't going to be the one to make the call to trade them. One of those two will.
Right. That's the key. And that's the tricky thing. Because, listen, I don't see them trading Crosby ever.
What if Crosby says he wants out?
If he does say that, that's great, but I don't see why he would ever say it. I don't see what he would ever say that. I think he's got so much stroke and so much sway. He can mold and shape that team any way he wants to.
I think the guys, respectfully, I think the estimation of the stroke and sway he has in Pittsburgh is greatly exaggerated from outside the market.
That's crazy. Why don't you let that kid, or that dude, I can't call him a kid anymore, allow him more sway on what he wants. And again, like at the end of the day, he's right. I mean, you look at the roster, and yeah, you can't control what happened to Dupuis, but you could sure as shit control what happened with Neal and the fact that they didn't replace that goal scoring. I mean, Hornquist being what he is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The Malkin thing to me is a more interesting one because would he go anywhere else? I mean, if he controlled his destiny, if he controlled where he could go anywhere else in this league, where would he go? And the teams that could, like the Edmonton Oilers could flip half their roster for Evgeny Malkin, right?
But would he ever go there?
Right. That's the issue with Gino. There's probably like six teams he'd play for in this league, the Pittsburgh being one of them.
He's got a list. It's a small list, guys. I can't share it with you, but I know it. And it ain't anywhere near Edmonton.
Do you know it? How many? Hold on. I'm not going to ask you the teams. Are there any Canadian teams on the list that he would go play
for? There is.
No. Oh. Is it Calgary? No, I'm kidding.
Going on a fishing trip here with Rob. Listen.
The center, I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah. Well, I think we know what you're talking about. Toronto. I know you've only got a couple of moments here because you're a real busy guy today, but I know we focus so much on what's happening in the off season, but out of this entire year, the one thing, and just mentioning his performance last night too, which I thought was excellent in a losing cause for the Pittsburgh Penguins, is this not the one year where finally we can, and maybe this is all depends on the playoffs too, Rob, stop being anxious about Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Fleury's been so good that he's elevated this rubbish of a roster to not selling completely out of the playoffs. He's been sensational this year. I mean, he's, like every goalie, he's had a few hiccups, but he's been their very best player this year from the first drop of the puck. The only reason they have not fallen completely out is because they've had Marc-Andre Fleury in net. And I will say this, I think we will look back at the decision not to start him in Philadelphia as one that might have cost Mike Johnston his job.
Wow. Well, Merrick and I are going to go drink heavily after this interview.
It's a dire interview,
Rossi.
Hey, I'm you know me, guys. I'm the heel, and I like it.
Speaking of which, finally, sir, I know that you have to go.
That's
but
awesome.
Your thoughts, Rossi, on the booking of the WrestleMania main event this last month?
Well, I got to recuse myself because Seth Rollins is kind of family. He's got ties to some in-laws.
No shit,
really? He really helped out a cousin of mine who was in a pretty bad way last summer. I know Seth is a heel, so he doesn't necessarily like those stories out. But I thought I hated WrestleMania as a whole, but I loved the booking of the main event. Loved it.
Yeah, it was smart. And I like Rollins a lot. I know that when the Shield made their debut, they actually all said, you know, Rollins was the guy that they all thought could be the next sort of HBK type dude, which you could see the charismatic heel. You could see the inklings of it. Obviously, this
you know me, guys. I love a charismatic heel.
You do, but unfortunately they decided to give the push to the giant man mountain with the pretty eyes. So,
wow.
Yeah, it happens. All right, listen.
Thanks, Rob.
You're one of our favorites,
thanks,
Rossi. Bye.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, dude. There he is.
Everybody,
Rob Rossi.
You know, when Rossi comes on, much like Joe Haggerty, he's very divisive, and I get that. I mean, he's not a beat guy anymore, and I understand that sentiment. But the thing, you have to understand this with Rossi, and like I've known him for a bit, and he's been on the show a ton of times. We use this term a lot in journalism, but I'm gonna use it, you know, now. He knows where the bodies are buried. That cat knows the ins and outs. You know, like, you know how, like, you read, like, a Bob McKenzie book and you're like, I can't believe this trade was almost made. Like, Rossi knows this shit. Rossi was, like, Jay Leno hiding in the closet in the late shift. Like, that guy knows more about that freaking team and its inner workings than anybody else. So I got all the time in the world for Rossi, but that was, holy shit, was that, dire about the Penguins.
Yeah, not the most uplifting interview we've ever done with Rob, but listen, man, it's not happy times in Pittsburgh right now.
Well,
it's
never,
not.
Never
like,
sunshine and rainbows.
Well, that's okay, but he's always kind of got at least a sideways smile. The thing about Pittsburgh, it's been this way for a while, and we've heard the stories, like honestly, Wish, for years about how Crosby's frustrated. at the lack of help, the lack of success, the playoff failures. Wasn't supposed to go this way for Sidney Crosby. He was the next Gretzky. Here comes more Conn Smythe trophies. Here comes more Stanley Cups. Here comes, you know, all the accolades. All of it. And it hasn't worked out. And that's why I did ask the question about Crosby. Not that they would actively move him, but at what point, and I'm not suggesting that it's now, but I'm just saying, like, put yourself in Crosby's shoes. You're looking at the offseason where there aren't a lot of moves to be made. And the moves you want to make are really difficult. You want to go back into another season like this with the same cast? Like, at what point does Crosby say, maybe I need a change of scenario here?
It's hard to envision it. It's hard to envision any. And again, you know, I've seen people.
That's what everybody said in 1988 after the Oilers had just won a cup. And how did that summer finish?
I saw Doug McLean talking about, like, just sort of speculating on a Malkin trade. You know, like, what if you flipped Kessel on the one for Malkin? Like, none of us have a concept of the return you'd get for Malkin.
It starts
with Kessel. It starts with the one, and then you get serious. Like, it's insane the return they'd get for Malkin.
Now, I don't disagree, but the one knock on Malkin is we're starting to see the injuries pile up.
But we always have. Like, I think he's always been a guy that's played through pain. He's always been a guy that's been nicked up just by the nature of the way he plays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is why I want. Listen, there's a part of me that always wants Crosby in the playoffs because he's one of my favorite players, and I love watching the Penguins in the playoffs. They bring natural heat to any matchup they're in. But this is exactly why I want them to miss, because this is like what San Jose should be if everybody didn't have a no trade clause, right? Like, this is so much fun to figure out what's going to happen. Is Grandpa still going to be the GM? Is Johnson still going to be the coach? Where does Sid go? Mm-hmm. Where does Malkin go? Where does Letang go?
I think the most interesting thing that Rob mentioned was the power struggle on top. That Ron Burkle and Mario Lemieux continue not to be on the same page about things, and who's going to win this one?
Phil Coker writes, and next time Rossi is on MVSW, can the intro for him be the Undertaker's theme song? So apropos on several levels.
That sort of vibe to it, Phil. That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's funny.
That's great. Moving over to the West, because we've beaten the drum on the East a lot. The West obviously was a huge night last night. Calgary with a big win. Minnesota clinches. Vancouver clinches. I will pat myself on the back for having the Canucks in the playoffs in my preseason predictions, but I sure as shit didn't. I mean, there's a lot of teams I picked in the other spots that aren't there. Let's leave it at that. But Winnipeg wins 1-0 in St. Louis. We begin, sir, talking
back
about
back-to-back shutouts.
Yeah, I know. So let's start on Pavlik. Do you trust him?
Nope. I mean, it's pretty simple. He's having a really nice year, and he's having a really nice run right now. I hope for Winnipeg's sake and for Pavlik's sake and for his representation's sake that this continues.
Mm-hmm.
But I've just seen him fall. I've just seen him crumble before.
Well, as you know, I think you're underestimating one facet of his game, which is what an inspiration he is. I mean, he honored his contract, and he worked hard to get in shape, and I think that's Masterton worthy.
Now. Now. I do want to say one thing, because I got into it. So I shouldn't say I got into it, because I resisted, but I had an interesting time reading some of the tweets that came back at me last night. That Stastny call yesterday was bullshit.
Now,
with a little
stick tap
on Tyler Myers.
I agree with you that it's bullshit, and I think there's two arguments to be made. The first is from the rulebook perspective. The rulebook does give an out for a player who does that if he's trying to make a hockey play. You can make the argument. Stastny puts his stick down on the ice to receive the pass from Ott on left wing. Ott releases the pass as Stastny's putting his stick down. Myers' stick happens to be there. Is it kind of a bullshit interpretation? Maybe. But by the letter of the law, you can make the argument that he's putting his stick in position to receive the pass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one.
I've had it with automatic slashing calls on broken sticks. I've had it with automatic calls because the player isn't squeezing his stick enough and he's too light with it. So it falls out of his hands and he throws it up in the air and turns to look at the referee. Like, I'm sorry. It's your choice to use a composite stick. Your choice. Now, there are slashes and then there are slashes. But as we've seen, stick taps or stick, oh, correct me if I'm wrong, stick checks are still allowed. Like when two guys like knock sticks together to try to get position. Like I like that in the game. Thank you very much.
Yeah, provided the other guy doesn't drop a stick.
Well, you can't be. It's like hitting someone, and it's like bumping into someone in front of the net, and they go spilling into the goaltender. Hey, man, it's not my fault. You didn't take power skating lessons when you were a kid. Like this is the old argument against Tom Pody, who would fall into goaltenders all the time because his balance was so awful. You gonna penalize the guy because another defenseman's balance isn't that awful? You gonna penalize Stastny because Tyler Myers wasn't gripping his stick tight enough last night?
I'll take the literal interpretation of the rule as my defense against it, but I essentially agree. There's two ways you can approach it. Either the call was wrong, or the call is wrong for the game.
Because by definition, and listen, officials have been, and not, this isn't a knock on the two officials working last night. I can't remember who.
Although they were. That game was atrocious. You can knock them all you want. That game was atrociously officiated.
Well, the Blues fans were all over them all game long too because of it. But that is how they have been instructed to make those calls. So I can't pin it on the referees that one specifically because they've been told to make that call.
Here's the bottom line. If you're someone that doesn't like diving and embellishment, and if you're someone who doesn't like guys turning their numbers to every hit along the board to draw a boarding penalty, then you sure as shit shouldn't like what happened last night. Because that's just as egregious and just as bad for hockey as anything else. Guys getting love taps and dropping their stick and doing the, huh? What? What happened? I don't know. I had a stick and now it's gone. I mean, F that. If you want the game to be good and not bullshitty and, I'm sorry, close your ears, Tyler Dello, soccer-like, then you shouldn't like that play last night on Stastny.
Yeah.
Now, that said, what do you think?
I just don't like the throwing of the arms up in the air, too, like, oh, wow, what an egregious foul against me.
What do you think of the Stastny cross-check to the head of Sturt? You see it?
Well, it wasn't a high stick. that's what the call was.
No, I said cross check. Well, no. The one where Stewart's on the ice and basically Backus gives him a cross check to the back of the head.
Becomes
an issue because of the Bufflin thing. But the Bufflin thing, the puck was nowhere there, and he drove the guy's head into the ice. It's not a love tap. He took his stick and drove T.J. Miller's head into the ice.
And again, Hockey Ops still does.
Or JT Miller, rather.
Still does look at cross checks as part of, you know, under the umbrella of it happens in hockey.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous door you open when you start significantly suspending on these things. Although, man, they had their hands tied behind their back on Bufflin because that was guillotine time. Right?
Meanwhile, the LA Kings are now 3 points in back of the Winnipeg Jets.
Edmonton.
They're two points in back of the Calgary Flames. They get Calgary on Thursday night, but they need help. They need a lot of help. Now,
and this is
the good
after,
news is that
after,
Winnipeg also...
Yeah, this is all after Drew Doughty finally scored his first power play goal of the year on a gorgeous play. Oh, wait a minute. It was a shot from center.
Think about how massive that loss is, that a Drew Doughty goal from center ice is like the third most important thing that happened.
Yeah.
They lose the game with Martin Jones. Now, I understand the logic in playing Martin Jones. I only fault him for maybe two of the goals. But again, I mean, one of them was a break. It happens.
Yep.
He had two shutouts against Edmonton last year. They wanted to give Quick a blow. It was a back-to-backer, having traveled, and the last time Quick did that, he dropped, I think, back-to-back games in Edmonton and Calgary back in December. So it's all there, logically, to start Jones, but three games left in the season, and you need wins. You may need to win out, and you don't go with your guy. You don't go with Conn Smythe. You don't go with the guy who's backstopped you to two cups. I cannot agree with that one. I cannot.
Look what Boston's doing with Tuukka Rask. You know what? Too bad. You're tired? That's fine. You're going in. Oh, you leave the game because of exhaustion and dehydration? That's fine. You're going back in next game. I'm with you. I kind of get the feeling that's what LA should be doing with Quick.
Dubnyk's not had a night off. The only reason that Craig Anderson played is because Hammond was hurt.
Hammond, man.
So, yeah, I don't quite get the logic in not playing Quick in that game. But that's neither here nor there. They played a real shitty first half of the game. They came on late a little bit. They couldn't get the goal they needed. and they lose to the Edmonton Oilers. And now it's now, again, they get Calgary, and then Calgary plays Winnipeg. So there are avenues for the Kings to still make this thing work. But that is a tremendously bad loss. Tragic number down to two for the Kings.
Mm-hmm. Huge couple of games coming up for the Flames. It's going to be fun to, like, honestly, this is the best. You hate seasons that end where everything's all sewn up and tucked away and everybody rests their players and their empty games. Not so much this year. Like, I think we're going right across the board. I think we're going right across the board with the Calgary game on the Calgary-Winnipeg game on Saturday. I think it's going to be on all the Sportsnet mains. I think, because our 5 o'clock show got scrubbed for the week. So I think we're going all across the mains for it. That's how big this one is.
The mains.
Yeah, so Sportsnet, East Ontario, Pacific, all of it, West. I think. I haven't seen distribution, but that's what I believe is happening.
All right. Your playoff situation.
Fucking good.
Almost nothing happening tonight outside of Washington, Boston.
Take a breath.
Gird your loins for tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a hell of a time.
Down.
And also, clinching night for the Sabres could be for number 30 in this league, guaranteeing them either
the
Jack Eichel or Connor
chance.
McDavid.
Yeah. Well, that's you got right. A franchise. Either way, you're getting a franchise-changing player. Good
that's
for
right.
Buffalo. Either way, Tim Murray, you got a player that's going to change your franchise.
It's a nice consolation prize when the Flyers draft McDavid.
Ooh, jeez. Panthers. McDavid to Yager.
Connor McDastardly. Connor McPanther. Connor McDevil, obviously.
Connor McDevil.
King Connor. King
Connor's good, too. Oh, that is good. King Connor's a
and
pretty
then,
good
oh,
one.
Oh, and if he gets drafted by the Sharks, he's Connor Mc. Jaws music.
Not bad. No, I get it. Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for
pointing that out. Yeah, I mean, I had to feel like I had to spell out the reference. Oh, Connor McDesert for the Coyotes.
Connor McDesert.
And, Connor
McDesert. It's got to be a better one for the Sharks. There's got to be a better one for the Sharks. Connor Mc.
I have one for the Leafs.
Oh boy, here we go. What do you got?
Connor McDammit.
That's from 29 other teams. Connor McDammit.
Yeah. Or from his, yeah, exactly. From the 29 other teams, from everybody else. Connor McDammit. People still mourning the loss of 1940 and knowing that 1967 is a scant few years of disappearing as well.
Connor McReally? Jesus.
All right, it's time now for what I would like to call a Wednesday favorite. Mailbag segment every week.
It's time to look deep segment. Into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com. On Twitter @JeffMerrick and @Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Norm writes in, this is more of a question for you, Greg, because I already know Jeff's answer, but make him repeat it for the rest of the listeners, obviously. Assuming you can go back in time and follow any team, any era, with a Road to the Winter Classic, like All Access show, which team would you follow? What team was yours? The Islanders?
Oh, Boston Bruins, early 70s. Going away. Oh, sure. Cheesy, Doki, Phil, Bobby, all those guys. EJ. Oh, yeah. And the Ragins, too. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah.
Norm says mid-70s Philadelphia Flyers, but the only answer is...
That'd be good. That'd be good.
The only answer is 1980s Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, but you just couldn't take them to baseball games because there wouldn't be any foul balls. Figure out the
also,
reference.
Also, the entire series would be a collection of doors closing on cameras. At the club... At the practice facility.
I would just like to see the background of that Mark Messier, Gary Coleman shot. Like, what led up to that moment?
Mr. Fuhrer, we're supposed to do some camera time now. Just need a second. Just give me a couple seconds.
Oh, Dirk Diglett, by the way, has the best one. Connor McTank for the Sharks. Very good. Very good. There it is.
I love that. It's So wait, well, so yours was the Bruins. The Islanders
were early 70s.
Jake Ivey writes in, how long will it take for Twitter to explode when the Kings win the lottery? What would make Twitter explode the most? The
Toronto.
Leafs, right?
Toronto, yeah. Would melt it. Yeah. Would melt it. Yeah. That'd be it. Forget it. Oh, you know what? Any team with Gump Worsley on it. Like, I think we've moved past the team 24/7. Let's just follow a player around.
Oh, I thought this was about Twitter.
No. I'm still back on that great question about if you could 24/7 any team in history.
Cameron Hunt writes in, are there teams you just inherently have little interest in? It seems like the vast majority of conversation and topics are directed towards 10 to 15 teams. Is that just the way news goes, or do you not find, say, the Canucks stories of interest? That's a really interesting question. I do find myself gravitating to about 15 teams, maybe 16, 17 teams. I think my placement in the East is part of that, just because the East is so compact and everybody seems to have a more blood rivalry with each other. Vancouver is a great example. I think there was a lot more interest in Vancouver in every year but this year. I mean, you can't argue that the Canucks are a team that people have inherently little interest in when the interest in the Canucks was at its apex around the time they played for the Cup. I think when they're good and when there's personalities and especially when there's a stalking horse like Chicago that they're going after, then there's a lot of interest. Are there franchises you don't give a shit about? Sure. I'll never give a shit about the Coyotes, I don't think. And I'll never give a shit about...
They win the lottery?
Connor
McDavid's playing with Anthony DeClaire and Max Domi? You don't care about the Coyotes?
All right, I might come around to that. Okay. So I won't say never. In the foreseeable future, I don't see myself giving a shit about the Coyotes.
See, for Vancouver, for me, it's weird because I talk so much about Vancouver on television. Doing TV in Canada, we spend a lot of time talking about all the Canadian teams. So it doesn't feel to me like I haven't spent enough time snuggling up to Canucks stories. Might be true on the podcast, but it just doesn't feel that way to me because maybe I spend so much time talking about them on TV. I don't know. It's a good question.
I think it's also a situation where, and not to bring everything back to wrestling, but there's a reason why the Triple H Sting match has resonance. It's because you have two guys that have decades of history. Okay, so when you're dealing with original six teams or expansion era teams or whatever, like you're dealing with teams that have eons of history at their backs. And I'm sorry, like that's why it means more to me to see the Philadelphia Flyers in the playoffs than it is to see the Minnesota Wild, all due respect to the Wild, who are a very interesting team, but maybe not on the level of the Flyers. And Minnesota, to me, is an interesting example. By all rights, the things they've done in the last few years, the players that they have, the Dubnyk story, they should be a top-of-the-above-the-fold story for every sports publication. And they're there, because I think the franchise creates a little bit of apathy for people.
Every hockey team is a mystery book, and for a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, you're deeper into the mystery than you are the Minnesota Wild, because they've been around as long as you've been around, Greg. So you've been reading this mystery book for a longer time, so you're deeper into the story than you're into the Minnesota Wild. Is that accurate?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, that's a good question, though. And I think everybody's got a team or two that they're just sort of like, ugh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sure the Devils are like that for many, 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 many people. Ryan Selfridge writes in, I'm a Flyers fan and followed the media's impression of Steve. And following the media's impression of Steve Mason is frustrating. He's been an above average goalie since his time in Philadelphia and has been elite this year, considering the defense in front of him. What does he have to do to be considered as a top level goalie in the NHL? Well, we just got done talking about impressions. Top level goalie, Philadelphia Flyers. It's a bit of oil and vinegar for a lot of people.
Yeah,
or oil and water, rather.
Yeah. Had one for a longish time. I just think you need to be on the biggest stage, and the biggest stage is the Stanley Cup playoffs, and get in there and win a round. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to show when everyone's watching. It's like, you know what? Hockey tough guys were notorious for this in the 70s and 80s, saving it up for Saturday night. Like, when you knew you were on, or your team was on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturdays... There's no point in having a big fight on a Tuesday when maybe it's just going to be local TV and possibly it's going to be a dark day and only there for 16,000 fans that buy tickets. You save your big performances for the big night. Like, everyone knew that Saturday night was showtime. And that's where you had the biggest performances, the biggest fights, the biggest whatevers. And now that's the playoffs. Do it when everybody's watching. I think Flyers fans know exactly what Mason's about. I think people that follow Philadelphia Flyers on Game Center or Center Ice know exactly what Mason's about. But I think until you do it on the big stage where everybody's watching, which is the playoffs, then you're going to get the respect. Or then you're going to get noticed. And then that story changes about Mason.
Be happy that Mason's no longer considered a bust. I don't think he's considered a bust anymore. I think people recognize that he's been good for the Flyers, if not a guy that's necessarily backed up his team to the postseason in consecutive seasons, although he was really good last year. Marlon Phillips writes in, I'm wondering whether Connor McDavid ends up, wherever Connor McDavid ends up, how many years you guys think until he becomes captain of that team? If it's Buffalo, is it his second year? If it's Colorado, does he have to wait until Landeskog is gone? Well, obviously, if he goes to a team with a young captain, he won't be the captain. Buffalo, that's a really good question. I mean, Taves was the youngest captain, or at least one of the youngest captains.
Landeskog was ahead of him. Youngest. Yeah, he was the youngest.
Landeskog might be the best example of high draft pick, and then assuming the captaincy just because of where that franchise was in its maturation. I don't know. It's interesting. That's a good question.
Probably coming out of entry level, you'd say?
You think so? Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Three years into it or such. Well, I mean, he'll go back to junior for a year.
Yeah, and Jack Eichel's going back to BU. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sure. All right. Yeah, all right. Hey,
Jeff and Greg, Michael from Winnipeg here. If the Jets make the playoffs, do you think fans should adopt past tradition and fully embrace the whiteout, or should fans create a new tradition? Also, which top-tier Western Conference team do you think they'll fare best against in the first round?
First of all, and I hope people get this one, don't throw a bag of popcorn on the ice. Second of all, yeah, whiteout, because that's what you associate Winnipeg with, even though, you know, some more cynical fans may say, well, the original Winnipeg Jets are in the desert right now, and so they're the ones that have domain over the whiteout. I go whiteout all the way for Winnipeg. What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I go whiteout, too. Reclaim it.
Yeah.
Coyotes aren't in the playoffs. You can reclaim the whiteout. They're not going to be there.
Take the whiteout.
Take the whiteout back. Take the whiteout back, ladies and gentlemen. Finally, Dave Rizzolara. Thank you.
Good Lord.
That Halak goal last night aside, should Jack Capuano be concerned about his job should the Islanders lose out and not make it into the playoffs? Well, I think they're going to make it into the playoffs. I never thought of him as a great coach, and considering how the Islanders have played the last month or so, does he deserve to keep his job if they lose the last few games? Wish it would be a collapse only known to New York Mets fans like me and you. Yeah, it would be a hell of a collapse. It ain't going to happen. They're going to make the playoffs. But so are we all back on Cap being the guy that gets fired before the guy comes in to lead them to the championship? Is that where we are on Cap now? Because we weren't like that early in the season. Are we back to that now for Cap?
I don't know. We've always had that feeling that you know who's standing right beside him on the bench is going to be the head coach when this team actualizes in the playoffs. But, man, Jack Capuano is like Keith Richards. He just keeps on surviving. First of all, if the Islanders fall out and don't make the playoffs, don't worry. They've got a shot at Connor McDavid. Oh, wait, Buffalo has that pick. Oh, wait, Buffalo can get picks number one and two then.
Yeah. Oh, God. Right?
We're talking about Pittsburgh disasters? How about the Islanders? That would be the Islanders. You could hand Buffalo one and two. The Islanders win that, and then Buffalo slides down and get both McDavid and Eichel.
Connor Sedin and Jack Sedin. That's what it'd be. Wow, that's crazy. No, they'll make it. And listen, there's a very good chance if they're playing the Capitals in round one, which it looks like they will, that they'll lose. I think the Caps are a very good bet in round one. Don't ask me about subsequent rounds, but round one, I think so. I don't know, man.
I think I'm kind of getting that soap and warm water feeling about Washington in the playoffs. I'm doing something and maybe coming out of the East. I really am.
The problem is that, once again, because of this stupid ass bracketing that the NHL does because they want people to bet on it like it's March Madness, it's going to be the Rangers and the Capitals in round two. It's no reason.
Okay, that's fine. I know Rangers would look like the class of the NHL from
Montreal.
Post, but
Montreal can play a team with 97 points.
Yeah,
the Rangers would have to play a team with more points than the You know what I'm trying to say to you. I hate the fact that the top seeds aren't protected in this format. It's a pain in the ass. It's one of my pet peeves with the playoff format. Although, you get, again, it's a trade-off because you get crazy parity. You get crazy multiple scenarios at the end of the season where now all of a sudden the Kings can get in via the Flames. They can get in via the wild card. Like, it's a format that lends itself to chaos, and I appreciate that. But I just don't like the idea that the Rangers put up 111 points and may have to play a better team in round two points-wise than Montreal would. That's a pain in the ass for me.
Yeah, sucks the Rangers, but from the greater point of view, how much are we loving how the season is ending up? Greater good, buddy. Greater good. What's for the greater good?
Yeah, you're right, essentially. Michael Polo writes in, how about Connor McRib for the Carolina Hurricanes? That's so good. Yukon Cornelius says, Connor...
That's great.
For the Sharks, Connor McNo-Move Clause. Very good.
Oh, that's very good, too.
And then also we had one more. Joe Pack, our good friend, writes in for Toronto, Mayor McDavid.
First of all, if San Jose ends up getting the first overall pick, they need to go with Travis Konechny because, as we know, Doug Wilson loves his Ottawa 67s. I just had to throw that in there.
One more, by the way, before we close out. Ty Fisher with a good question.
What's up?
Who is given the more regrettable contract this summer, Devan Dubnyk or Andrew Hammond? Regrettable? Well, regrettable is going to be Hammond because I really feel like he's a one-hit wonder. Dubnyk?
Yeah.
Dubnyk doesn't seem like the type that's going to go and try to break the bank. I think they're going to wind up giving him a Ben Bishop show me contract, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, Hammond might be the one. I spoke to one ex-goaltender on the weekend. I said, what did you think of...
Was it Michael Layton? And did he say, my God, that's me. That's me.
Someone that I work with. Thankfully, there's a number of goaltenders I work with, so you can't pinpoint him. I said, what do you think of Hammond, like from a goaltending point of view? And you know what he said? He's a hot mess. You don't love the style. You can't figure out how he's doing it, but damn it, there it is. And he's getting results. But make no mistake about it, this guy's in. He's a hot mess.
That third goal last night where he was literally pirouetting in the crease like a ballerina when they scored. I can see that as
hot
being
mess.
Problematic. But it's been fun. I mean, it's fine. It's not going to be. And plus, it couldn't happen to a better team than Ottawa, who does, if memory serves, have other options in goal that don't require them to hitch their wagon to Andrew Hammond if need be.
I've always had good goaltending. Every year, it's like, they have too many goaltenders.
But isn't there a part of you, and by that I mean your sphincter, that clenches when you see the Senators giving out face placards with Hamburglar masks and shit? You're just like, oof, you know, it's nice, it's a great story, but at some point, like, Upper Deck is making an Andrew Hammond card, like where he's eating a cheeseburger or some shit. Like, it's just like, ugh.
I know. We talked about it a few weeks ago. I know. You know where I'm at on that. Still too early for that.
Like get there. Like if the Devils started to create an entire campaign around Jacques Lemaire the year where he led them back to within 8 points of the bubble but didn't get in. It's the same principle. Like, if they don't get in, they don't get in, right? So, all right.
Now, the Jacques Lemaire bobblehead doll, that would have him holding two bungee cords attached to someone else's hockey pants, pulling them back into the neutral zone. And not allowing him to go too deep into the offensive zone?
You just blew my mind.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Rob, the divisive Rob Rossi.
Awesome Rob Rossi. The bring of the depression Rossi.
There's a lot of people that don't like us having Rob Rossi on this show, ladies and gentlemen.
What? I don't see it. I don't get it.
Sample pros. Let's see here. MG, when you were talking about the team you cover and then don't remember the head coach's name, I don't remember him doing that, but this is...
He just coughed a second on it. Big deal. It happens to me all the time. Don't worry about it, Phil. It happens to me all the time, Phil Wyszynski.
Yeah, a lot of people weren't really happy with us having Rossi, but that's all right. We've had him on.
Why?
I think he's got insight. Jeff Phillips, it's a shame Rossi will go on MVSW and tell Penguins fans lies and scare them into thinking the world is going to end in the offseason.
Oh,
well,
God.
I'm not going to disagree with that assessment of his tone, but it's not to say, I don't think he's talking out of his ass when it comes to the managerial stuff.
I don't think so either. Yep. I'm down with Rossi.
And finally, This was a good one I'm going to find. Patty writes in, we are learning way too much about what podcasters wear while they are doing what they do on MVSW.
Right.
Is this true? And as you can see, the time is now 60 minutes since the start of the podcast, and I am ready to shed this this bathrobe and put on my big boy clothes to go do some
wow.
video.
Congratulations. It's 3 o'clock, and now you're an adult today. Well done, Greg Wyszynski.
That is correct. And now, as soon as I find someone to dress me, I will...
As soon as my girlfriend gets home to dress me, I will be a grown-up again.
Well, ties are tough. Well, listen. I'm not... All right. I'll just say it. The cat's out of the bag. NHL ties, if you're listening.
Yep.
I'd say about 30% of my ties are pre-tied.
Come on. Really? Okay. Let me ask you the follow-up question then, as an investigative journalist.
I can tie a tie.
Who tied them in the first place?
No. I did.
Really, eh? And then
but
you
then
just
I take them off.
But hang on, when did you tie them when you first got? Like, do you have like a
no
a cupboard I tied them. A cupboard full of tied ties?
I have if I've got I don't know I can't do the percentages off the top of my head, but I would say about 30% of my ties are pre-tied. But I tied them, so I get points.
Congratulations.
But those times, NHL ties, you scurrilous bastard, those times when you point out that my tie is too short, it's probably because I threw it on and didn't retie it.
Listen, no one gets more grief on that Twitter feed than me, so you can just deal with getting a couple of arrows, okay?
A couple of darts. I've never gotten an attaboy. I'm looking for them.
Well, our little fella.
And now you know why. All right, everybody. Yeah, we gotta go. Good night and God bless. We'll see you soon. Bye. Thank you.